So Ben joined us yesterday for about 2.5 minutes. He's back today. Crazy day yesterday with the big announcement down at the National Press Club. Ben joins us now because we did not have a chance to really go deep into the draft. You did mention to me yesterday that you thought, you know, the biggest surprise was what I think we all thought the biggest surprise was, and that is that they did not take an edge defensive end in a draft loaded with them. Why don't you think they did?
Well, I mean, you know, when we were discussing the draft, you know, I think my overwhelming thought was we're all trying to pinpoint certain positions or players, but ultimately they put themselves in position through free agency to kind of do whatever they wanted. They didn't have to, you know, feel like they were desperate to get anything. Certainly some positions could use a bump, and, you know, cornerback and offensive line at a minimum were two positions that needed more depth and at a maximum needed, you know, better options in the starting lineup. They went that way.
But see if we can get Ben, call back. Your phone just keeps kind of breaking up a little bit there. So we'll try to get a cleaner connection with Ben Standing at Ben Standing on X on Twitter. Ben writes for The Athletic. He's got a podcast that's very good called Last Man Standing. You know, I was looking through, because so many people do it, just the draft grades. There are literally like 50 plus outlets that do draft grades after the draft. It's content, for sure. And Washington's, you know, kind of consistently, for what it's worth, I don't think it's worth much, comes in behind the Dallas, Philly, and Giants draft. But I think that more than anything else is because of the number of players. Washington only had 5 players selected in this draft. Dallas picked 9 players in the draft. Philadelphia in this draft selected, hold on, let me just count them, 10 players in the draft. And the Giants selected, they selected 7 players in the draft. So Washington's number is going to probably give it less of an opportunity to be graded highly. Do we have Ben back?
We're resetting the phones now.
Okay. Let me know when he's back. Mel Kiper, by the way, and I read this yesterday. Mel Kiper's been doing this for how long? 40-something years. He's never apparently given an A-plus after a draft. Because he loves Shedeur Sanders so much, and I'm sure if you were watching the draft on ESPN, you gathered that. He gave Cleveland his first ever A-plus grade for their draft. Anyway, we have Ben back. So you were answering the question as to why ultimately you think they did not select a pass rusher or a defensive end edge player. The reason, again, was?
Yeah, you can hear me better now.
Much better.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, look, as you know, we're all trying to look at the specific needs. What do they need? What players could fit that need, et cetera. But, you know, I think the overriding factor above everything was that they put themselves in position in free agency to not feel desperate to do anything. In the draft we saw a year ago where they took Johnny Newton, figuring that was the best player available for them. And, we weren't talking about defensive tackle as a need, at least for last season. And I think the same thing applies here. We knew, at least I thought, that they needed at a minimum more depth on the offensive line and cornerback, if not, you know, potential upgrades at some starting spots. We knew they needed more speed on both sides of the ball. They did that. So, you know, look, do I think they still need more upside and athleticism at edge? Absolutely. I mean, right now you're looking at, you know, Dorrance Armstrong, who was solid last year. Dietrich Wise, who's been a good vet in his career, but neither one of those guys, you know, combined they had a half sack less than Dante Fowler, which isn't to say that Dante Fowler is a massive loss because he was limited in other areas. It's just that they don't have anybody on the roster right now who had, you know, more than 5 sacks last year. Really, I think the only guy under 25 years old is last year's 7th-round pick, Javonte Jean-Baptiste. So they've got 6 guys that you could start the season with and be like, okay, we have a rotation, but you know, there's minimal upside relative to, you know, some other pass rush scenarios around the league and run stoppers. So, you know, I think it's still a concern, but at the same point, you know, with only five picks, there was only so much they were going to be able to do. And all the picks that they did make did address areas that I think we also discussed as spots that they could use help in. So, you know, edge rusher got the short stick, and they'll have to move forward with what they have. Maybe that means going into free agency, but even then, you're not talking about younger athletic guys. You're just talking about more depth and maybe some guys who are a little more proven in some areas than what they have now.
Was there a player that you had a sense after talking to people that they are really excited that they were able to get at any point in the draft?
Well, I mean, you know, I guess depending who you talk to, certainly every player that they got was the best player on their board, Kevin. So obviously that's good. You know, they're pretty happy with the group overall. I mean, Peter said he was sweating out Josh Connerly going all the way into the top, you know, 10 or 11 picks. And, you know, I think in a draft in which, as we discussed pre-draft, like there was the tackle depth really dropped off after the first, you know, five or six guys. And Connerly was kind of, you know, one of the, maybe the last of those guys that were still available. So I think to that extent, getting him made a lot of sense. Whereas, you know, some of the other positions was a little more potential depth down the line. But yeah, I mean, I think all these guys individually to me just make a ton of sense. Like I'm not saying that these five players, the individual people, are home run picks and that this is going to be the best draft class ever. But in terms of like the reality, here's what they need. Here's what was available. Here's what this person does. I think they all make a ton of sense. And, you know, especially when you look at the last, you know, those picks in like the sixth and seventh round, we talk about the position that the player, you know, he plays this spot. But the reality is you have to look at guys who have specific traits that you either presumably need more of or don't have on your team and that can fill in a role. You know, you look at the running back out of Arizona, you know, we've talked about them needing more, you know, big play potential, explosiveness out of the backfield because Brian Robinson, Austin Eckler, good players, but they don't really have that. And, you know, the Kroski Skerritt, I hope I'm getting that, saying that one right. He's got some of that. Again, doesn't mean he's the next Barry Sanders, but he brings an element that they don't otherwise have. And I think that's what you've got to look for when you get into the later rounds. And then, you know, those earlier rounds, you have specific needs. You need production, Connerly, Amos, and Lane, you know, fit that. So, I think if I say everybody's pretty happy about what they did, I don't mean that in the, hey, we're thrilled with these are the best guys we could have gotten. I just think that they really did address, you know, the quote unquote need spots as well as, it just filled in with certain traits that they needed. Nothing to me feels off with any of their picks.
You know, what I'm going to say is not necessarily criticism. It's just an observation because I think there's a lot of things that could happen defensively in a second year in a system with players, by the way, who were on the roster last year that didn't contribute because they were too young or they were too hurt. Jordan McGee would be an example of that. But, you know, other than Will Harris, because he appears to be the replacement for Jeremy Chinn, did they add a player in this offseason defensively that we know will be part of a starting rotation even, for sure?
Well, I mean, if they want to move Mikey Sanders still to slot, which is ultimately where they wanted him to be, then maybe Trey Amos is the other starter opposite Marshon Lattimore. You know, he gives them more size. You know, even if they had looked at Sanders still and Jonathan Jones as the potential starters, both of those guys are, you know, listed at 5'10", so, you know, not big. Amos is bigger than that, so it could be him depending on how quickly he adjusts and whether or not they are down with Sanders still going back to slot. The Javon Kinlaw signing, obviously one we all, you know, sort of scratched our head a little bit. It you wouldn't think he's a starter at defensive tackle, but they talked about him, you know, being a guy who could be used on the edge a bit to help set, the edge on the run game. So, you know, if that's going to be the case, presumably he might actually start, right? Because the early downs are when teams are, you know, more apt to run. So maybe he's a starter in that sense, but he would at least be, you figure, in the mix with Armstrong and Wise there. So, but yeah, to your point, they didn't like have like these major, oh, that's an obvious, you know, move. Like, they didn't do the Laremy Tunsil or Debo Samuel, or spend the first round pick on the offensive tackle who we were looking at that being the starting right tackle. They did not do that. And, you know, we've talked about, like, I think in order for me to say that this defense has really improved, I'm going to have to kind of see how this plays out in training camp and preseason. And, you know, at a minimum, just to see how are they using these guys, you know, are there just simply improvements based on being second year under this new coaching staff? You know, you mentioned like a Jordan McGee, you know, is a guy like that who, you know, I don't, not think he's going to have a huge role, but is there a way to get a guy like that on the field a lot more? They really liked him a year ago when they drafted him in the fifth round. So yeah, the main additions this offseason were unquestionably on the offensive side of the ball, which again, Jaden Daniels, help him, further his growth, all makes sense. But yes, they definitely didn't have like that, okay, this is definitely a better scenario on defense. But you know, that's where they got to hope that Amos, you know, hits, and that this Kinlaw scenario, you know, really does address what was clearly the defense's biggest weakness last year.
Tell everybody, I think you know this, what Quan Martin was dealing with all season long that we really didn't know about. I don't think we did.
Yeah, the team had a draft party on Saturday down at the Harbor, and some of the reporters that were there for that talked to him, and he said he was dealing with two separated shoulders last year, that he had surgery this offseason to deal with that. It was not something that was discussed, and I guess you could say not something being put on the injury report weekly, if he was really dealing with this. But I guess he was playing through, you know, a decent amount of pain if you're dealing with separated shoulders, having to hit people for a living. So, you know, look, I mean, Quan Martin, you know, certainly, you know, one of the better draft picks from the Rivera era.
Yeah.
You know, we really, you know, the guy we really haven't had to say, boy, when are they going to replace him or get him competition? He's been a pretty legit player here, and you know, would be very interesting to see where his career goes. But yeah, clearly he was dealing with more physically than any of us, you know, knew last year.
By the way, he had surgery on both shoulders after the season ended. He revealed that as well. We're talking to Ben Standig. The draft is over. They got five players. They did not get an edge. I'm going to read this because I read it earlier and answered, but it was pretty funny. I got this from someone named Dolph. Commanders draft, tragically bad media, was the subject heading. Kevin, the Commanders had a solid draft, but the talk shows and pundits were simply awful. Everyone said they had to take an edge in a deep draft with edge rushers. Wrong. Nobody I listened to, you, Keim, Standig, Nicky, et cetera, got any of the names right. Weeks, if not months of work and lots of, they really like this guy and that guy, and it was all wrong. I know the excuse, this was an unpredictable draft, but the magnitude of the miss by the media and pundits was epic. People, perhaps some humility is in order, maybe even an apology. The reason that I wanted to read it to you is that you actually got one right. You had in your mock, in your Skins mock draft, Jalen Lane being selected. So congratulations. Hey, Dolph, how about that?
Can I just say this? And this is, I know it's a family-friendly conversation, but hey, Dolph, bite me. What are you talking about? First of all, if you're talking about like the, you know, the here one player that you picked, and yes, I did not have Josh Connerly there, but to say not being discussed, I mean, I'm sorry, you can literally go read my written word on The Athletic, or if you got time, go subscribe and go back and listen to conversations about Josh Connerly specifically on my podcast. And yeah, in terms of the mock drafts, you know, you know, look, anybody in the first round, I mean, you know, if we're just talking about getting it exact, I mean, that's, you know, nobody's getting more than, you know, in the entire first round, you know, 10 or 11, right, typically at the, and that's like three or four people if we're talking like these, the national contests. So anybody could sort of throw a dart and got to get that one right to an extent. But like, yeah, I'm sorry, my guy, Jalen Lane, I had in multiple mocks at pick in the fourth round to pick 128, and Kane Medrano. Oh, I do, because I take this seriously.
No, the point is, getting this is, I said this earlier because I read his email. This is number one on the list, and I don't even know if there's a close second in terms of the conversations we have on an annual basis about sports that literally nobody knows much at all. Everybody is going to be a lot more wrong than right, no matter what they say. Predicting where a player is going to be taken, predicting whether or not they believe the player is going to be a good player or not. It is not about accuracy. Look, you've been very good with your mock draft, so I don't want to knock that. You've been a multi-time mock draft champion over the years. But you still end up with more wrong than right. It's just nature of the draft. And when we're talking about a number 29 in the first round, the chances of getting that right are slim to none. A lot easier to get number two right last year.
I don't care if you ding me for not saying I had the exact pick at 29. He said it wasn't even being discussed, that this was an epic fail. And I'm saying, again, bite me. Like, what are you talking about? Like, I literally talked about Josh Connerly, specifically the human being, multiple times. I mean, you know, in the final mock draft, you know, the cornerback was the second one. You know, there were umpteen cornerbacks they could have picked. I know they like Benjamin Morrison at Notre Dame. He went before they picked. Whatever, that was a pick. And again, Lane there, and Medrano was in my final mock with the one involving like potential trades. So, you know, again, I have zero objection being like, hey man, you didn't get the 29 pick right. But to suggest it wasn't part of the conversation, no. I take much more pride in understanding what this team is looking to do than I do the individual person, because they could pick
right.
Like even people I know in the media were kind of like making fun of me for claiming I got certain guys right, because you know you could just do 100 mock drafts. I'm like, that if I did this in the 6 mock draft scenario which is an average of like 6 players per mock, that's 36 players. That's 36 out of like the 400 that Dane Brugler did profiles on, and the hundreds beyond that are just the option. And then if you say in a mock draft, I'm picking defensive end in the first round, then I'm not taking a defensive end probably in a fourth, or if I'm taking receiver. So even within that, there's like a minute amount of combination. So to get any of them right is significant. And to talk about them in advance individually is pretty good. So, yeah, again, Dolph, get out of here with this nonsense.
What do you think they may have done or wanted, or there was a possibility of them doing something that they didn't get a chance to do because the player was off the board, or the player that they picked was, you know, the better player on the board at the time? Do you think that there is a player or two that they would have loved to have had in this draft?
Sure. I mean, obviously, look, I mean, they can say that Josh Connerly and Trey Amos were the two best players on their board at the time they made the pick. But that's obviously just, you know, that there were other guys that could have been available. You know, I asked Peters and Lance Newmark about the edge rusher situation. You know, how come, you know, you didn't get one? Was that surprising? Whatever. And, you know, they both said, hey, we had lots of guys on our board, and we just felt that at this point, these players were the most available. I mean, it is slightly odd that in a year where defensive line, both positions, end and tackle, were considered to be, you know, arguably the deepest in the class, especially if you combine them both, that they didn't get any. Ironically, that may have been the reason they didn't get any, because that every time they went to pick a player, that, you know, like the tie perhaps went to the player who had to play the position where there's not going to be as many options down the line. So maybe, you know, I can't say, look, but they could have picked some guys like Donovan Azaraku. He was on the board when they picked. But, you know, a lot of these defensive ends, you know, whether it's a Shamar Stewart, or, you know, I know you and I think that James Pierce wasn't going to be in play for them, and probably so. But at the same time, he was like, he had the fastest 10-yard split at the combine, and that's a stat that Adam Peters has historically used or liked in his defensive end. So who knows? Maybe that was somebody that they at least somewhat considered. But, again, maybe there was a receiver that they liked more than Jalen Lane, but that guy went off the board in, you know, round three, even, and because they didn't have a pick there and so on. So obviously there were tons of guys I wish they could have had, and you have to imagine that at one point an edge rusher was one of them. But again, other than that, you know, they the if you had said to me, here are the five here are the positions that they need the most help at. Like, other than edge, I think they got all the ones accurately. Tight end didn't make sense. Quarterback didn't make sense. Never really thought too much about safety, but obviously they could have, if Malachi Starks or, if he had been available, he went to the Ravens two picks earlier, maybe a guy like that. But in general, they hit the positions you would have thought they would have, except for edge.
Yeah, I'm just curious. Did you go back and look? Were all of the five players that they drafted, were they top 30 visits, or were they private pro day or private workouts or pro day workouts?
I know Connerly and Amos were.
Yeah, and I think Kroski Merritt was here. Too.
Yeah, and I believe Lane was here for the local pro day, I want to say. Medrano, I don't know for sure about that one, but look, Adam Peters,
they worked him out at UCLA
pro day.
Yeah,
and Peters obviously a UCLA guy. He's with that one also, Ken Norton Jr. was his position coach, so they had a 3-year workout in essence for him with Ken Norton there at UCLA with him for several years. So they may not have exactly needed to do too much specific due diligence on that one. I think they're generally a pretty straightforward situation. To pin down a specific human being that they would like is never going to be easy. But once these picks have been made, it's kind of like, okay, I kind of get why this happened. To me, the
athletic score, high character, these are two things we knew to look for going in anyway. They did, by the way, I've got the top 30 visit list. They had Connerly Jr. in, they had Kroski Merritt in, and that was it among their draft choices. They had Azaraku in, they had Hairston in, so guys that, were on the board at 29 that, went shortly thereafter in either the first round or the second round. Yeah, they had Oladejo in from UCLA as well. In the second round, I was starting to think that he would be the guy until they went. I was thinking he or Morrison had, once those players got, into the 50s or whatever, I thought one of those two players would be the player. I did not think they would select Mike Green had he been on the board at 61. Did you think there was any chance?
I didn't. I know they did some homework there, and obviously, again, this is where you've got to make a call. From an upside perspective, we're talking about a player who could have been a top 20, top 15, maybe even a top 10 pick without some of his the allegations against him. There's been no charges filed, but allegations exist, and you got to ask the question, what's going on here? So I know they at least looked into it. I still don't think they would have done that, but considering the Ravens took that chance a few picks earlier, and we typically look at the Ravens as a team that is one of the better organizations in the league, and they felt they were comfortable enough to do that. So who's to say Washington wouldn't have reached the same conclusion, but based on what we know so far in the limited history of Peters and Quinn here, I wouldn't think so.
Yeah, and going through the fourth round before the Lane pick, four edges literally were picked in the seven picks prior to them taking Lane. Four of them went off. David Walker went off, Sawyer went off, Baron Sorrell, and Kyle Kennard, who I thought was a possibility for them in the fourth round as well, went off three picks before. It comes down to what's actually available and what you're – I do believe them when they say they just draft their board. I do believe that. I think we've now seen evidence of that here in the first 2 years of drafting.
Well, and here's the other thing. By the way, for one, Trey Amos said that he did, he did talk to them at the combine, and he had conversations with them at Senior Bowl as well. So, there was at least – he said he didn't know for sure Washington would pick them, but there was some conversation. But here's the other thing, and this is, I think, what's important, because it's constantly getting lost when people view it as, hey, this is the team that was the NFC runner-up, and view it in that context. the real context to me is this is a team that is in year two of a recalibration, that they inherited a roster that had no depth, that had no youth because of all the failed draft picks, that has all these guys on one-year deals because they're just trying to like get the roster, you know, up to a viable level. They obviously went beyond that last year, thanks a lot to Jaden Daniels, and just a lot of things worked out. But they are still putting together a roster for the long haul. This is still a team that was one of the older ones in the league last year. And so the best player available works in part because the roster, frankly, is still deficient. And that's not the fault of Peters and Quinn. That's just the reality of what they inherited.
Sure.
And even still to this day. And so, you know, so therefore, it best, like typically best player available sounds like you're kind of just ignoring something that you need to do. That's no. Here, best player available works because literally almost any position, except for, say, quarterback and, you know, maybe arguably like tight end just because of who they had, any other position, any position would work. And so they were able to get players, the best player available at positions of need. And that's ultimately what you kind of want to do. But also in this case, that's just the reality of their situation. They could have picked almost any position and we would have said, yeah, they kind of took the best player available.
Any of the undrafted free agents that they brought in, do you sense, you know, they has a chance?
You know, I mean, like they signed this Louisville receiver Jacory Rogers, yesterday. He's a former Alabama transfer. He's got like he'll be the everybody's like summer training camp crush, summertime crush. He's like 6'2", makes athletic catches. You know, he was a five, I believe he was like a big time recruit coming out of college or coming out of high school. But, you know, he had some good numbers last year, but ultimately, you know, didn't put it all together enough to get drafted. I don't know if there's room for him. We go through this every year with the receivers. Always
his name's Jacoby Jones?
No.
Okay.
No, that's a different guy. Jacory.
Oh.
Like, there's two Jacorys. There's a Jacory that they drafted with R-Y, then there's an R-E-Y, again, out of Louisville. And he is a, you know, like I said, it's going to be a fun watch, but I don't know if there's real room for him out there. At the moment, and, you know, they haven't put out the official list of their signings, so until that happens, everything else is sort of a guess because these things can change. It's the wild, wild west in the UDFA market. But, you know, I would like to be curious if they do add an edge of any note. But, you know, yeah, beyond that, you know, I think you could do a 50. I did a depth chart story on the The Athletic. I didn't I didn't do a 53, but I mean, I almost feel like you could do a 53 right now and get pretty close because they do have. I feel like most of the roster spots seemingly are kind of.
All right, well, let's not go through the whole thing, but give me the surprise or give me the most competitive position for spots and give me the surprise that you gave. Did you have one?
Well, I didn't do any 53. I just looked at who they have. But, I mean, I think receiver. Yeah, I mean, but I think, like, you know, you look at the receiver room, right? You've got McLaurin, Debo, Noah Brown, Luke McCaffrey, Jalen Lane. You think all those five are going to make it. You still have Michael Gallup, right, who's been a vet in this league. You've got K.J. Osborne. I know he didn't do much when he got here, but he's been a productive player in the league in previous years, and this is always a position where you can kind of grab a guy and, you know, you're like, whoa, where'd this guy come from? Or maybe it's, you know, he's a special teams help, right. And that can be a thing. So I think receiver is going to be a fun one. You know, we mentioned the defensive line. You know, there are 11, there's six defensive ends and five tackles that I think you could just say, yep, that they're on that's their group. You know, there you go. But, you know, we know that's probably not necessarily going to be the case, that something is going to emerge, whether that's they end up signing another veteran here along the way or some rando UDFA type pops up. And so, you know, I think that's going to be a pretty interesting group as well. Then, you know, again, like the special teams battles, you know, where does that come into play? You know, there's a guy like a Tyler Owens who last year was made the team as an undrafted free agent. He's got crazy athleticism. You know, does he emerge as more than just a special teams guy? Can he actually, you know, push his way into the rotation? And now all of a sudden, if that happens, you know, what does that mean for anything. So I think those are some of the ones. I mean, look, I guess the other obvious one is quarterback, right? I mean, is Sam Hartman, you know, are they going to be able to put him on the practice squad for the second year in a row? Maybe, but, you know, if that happens, I mean, he's going to have to clear waivers and some right. team say, hey, you know, we'll take a shot. Right, right, with Josh yeah. Johnson here, right. So, you know, is that, or does Sam Hartman look so good in camp that they're like, hey, we can't, you know, this might be our guy. He might be our backup quarterback next year with Mariota on a one-year deal. Does he somehow push his way in and Johnson out? So, you know, that'll obviously be a fun one to watch as well.
All right, I want to wrap it up with this. Just give me the answer. Now that we have most of the offseason in the books, there's still, you know, players out there. They signed one today. They signed a kicker today in Matt Gay. For those of you just tuning in, Matt Gay, 7 years in the league. Indy the last 2 years. Rams before that. Washington signed him to a one-year $4.25 million fully guaranteed deal, and they released Zane Gonzalez. But given that, you know, 90% of the rosters are now known, did they make up ground on Philadelphia, lose ground on Philadelphia, or is it the exact same as it was when the season ended?
Well, I guess I would probably say it feels like it's kind of the same. I guess the question is, did the Laremy Tunsil and the Deebo Samuel and the Josh Connerly moves push this offense up to even another level or two after what they accomplished last year? You know, be one of the highest scoring teams in the league. You know, the offense is what carried this group last year. And, you know, sometimes, you know, having a tremendous offense is, you know, the best defense, if you know what I mean. So if that group, you know, if the offensive line improvements in particular really do help take this to another level, it helps Brian Robinson and Eckler, then, you know, maybe they did close that gap somewhat. It's just that defensively, you know, again, it's year two under this group. You know, maybe Johnny Newton, you know, he was fine last year, but, you know, coming in, he basically had no offseason to work with.
Right.
If he comes in and he's really ready to show, you know, what he can do, then maybe that's the pass rusher that they didn't add. You know, is this Daron Payne? Can he get back to that 2022 form? I mean, we'll see. If he can, then, you know, that's a disruptive piece that they didn't have last year.
All right. So it feels the same happen, to you.
But kind of, yeah. What about
okay.
you?
Okay. I'm going to answer it when we come back. How about that?
Oh,
I'll talk to
that.
You later. You can listen. Ben Standing, everybody. Thanks. Good job. At Ben Standing, of course, on X. So that's the question. Phone lines are open. 301-230-0980. 301-230-0980. We are now pretty much in a position where we know what the roster is going to look like. There could still be a big move, although a lot of reports coming out of Cincinnati look like that they're about to, the Bengals, sign Hendrickson to a long-term contract. That's the one guy still kind of out there, you know, lingering. Did Washington gain ground on Philadelphia with this offseason, lose ground on the Eagles, or are they exactly where they were when the season ended? 301-230-0980. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980, theteam980.com. We are streaming live on the Team 980 YouTube page as well. Please subscribe and like the show. Thanks.